From WSLR, LP 96.5 FM in Sarasota and WBPV LP 100.1 FM in Bradenton. This is Johannes Werner with your WSLR News headlines for Friday, July 25th. Manatee County is next on the governor's tour of scrutinizing local government budgets. In an appearance in Bradenton yesterday afternoon, Ron DeSantis said that, quote, "A lot of concerned people have asked for DOGE to take a look at Manatee County finances." During a press conference at the Manatee County Performing Arts Center, he said that in the last 6 years, the county population increased by 14%, but tax revenues grew by 86%. He said that rather than adding to reserves, which have grown beyond $700 million, the county should return money to taxpayers. Manatee County Commission Chair George Cruz welcomed the state audit last month, and he put in motion the creation of its own local DOGE task force. Manatee County Commissioner Carol Ann Feltz was the only commissioner in attendance at yesterday's press conference. The next stops for Florida DOGE audits will be the Democratic strongholds of Broward County and the city of Gainesville. Meanwhile, Manatee County utility workers unearthed something entirely different. The fossilized 8-inch claw of a giant ground sloth. While digging a trench, the workers found the 11,000-year-old fossil. The giant sloth was part of a mass migration from South America at a time of rapidly warming climate after the Ice Age. The 15-foot-tall giant sloth apparently did not migrate quickly enough and went extinct. The fossil is now at the Bishop Museum of Natural History in Bradenton, where you will soon be able to see it. If state regulators approve FPNL's request for a hike in base electricity rates, the investor-owned utility will see a record boost in profits. That's according to the Florida Consumer Advocate in filings to the Public Service Commission. But that's not all. In his filing, the legislature-appointed state consumer advocate called Public Counsel also points out the utility is trying to double dip. FPNL wants to charge consumers to pay its federal taxes as well. That would max out its profits at close to 13%. FPNL says it needs the rate hike to cover the cost of a booming population and rising electricity consumption. This has been Johannes Werner with your WSLR News headlines for Friday, July 25th.
The following program was pre-recorded in front of an audience of one real live cat. You're listening to WSLR LP 96.5 FM in Sarasota and WBPV LP 100.1 FM in Bradenton, who with the music and arts venue Fogartyville provide a center for creative expression and community engagement that amplifies the voices of our diverse community and promotes peace, sustainability, democracy, and economic and social justice. I am Lou Larini. Thanks for tuning in to Surreal News, where we offer opinions, comments, and perspective on the events of the week, which do not necessarily represent the station, its board, or anyone else other than the person who expressed them. Who would have thought that the most important promise for the followers of He Who Would Be King was to reveal any and all information the government had on convicted pedophile Jeffrey Epstein, including his so-called client list? For that group, apparently, that was the motherlode of evidence of the so-called deep state. You know, that shadowy group of democratic elites who drink the blood of children. But since they were told by acolyte AG Pam Bondi no such list exists, after years of being assured it was real by these same people, they are understandably ticked off. So, what's a wannabe king to do? Obviously, make up a bunch of new stuff to complain about and hope that calms the dissenters within the crew. Somehow, I don't think insisting that the Washington Commanders football team go back to its former racist name is going to fill the bill. Stay tuned until half past the hour to hear WSLR's news team reporter Ramon Lopez's live coverage of a demonstration last Saturday protesting the planned conversion of Camp Blanding to another immigrant detention center. But first, hear about perhaps the most preposterous claim to distract from the Epstein files. President Donald Trump's intelligence chief, Tulsi Gabbard, could wind up roping in Secretary of State Marco Rubio in her half-baked effort to expose a treasonous conspiracy against the president, according to a fact-checker. The Director of National Security released alleged evidence last week accusing Barack Obama and his high-ranking administration officials of criminal conspiracy against Trump related to the Russiagate investigation, and Washington Post fact-checker Glenn Kessler examined her claims, which she says will be referred for prosecution against previous probes of the matter. All told, the previous investigative reports add up to about 2,500 pages of dense probe compared with the thin gruel of emails and meetings agendas released by Gabbard, Kessler wrote. Her report provides no indication that she has studied the earlier investigations, yet she asserts there is a direct intent to cover up the truth about what occurred. If so, one of the co-conspirators would be the current Secretary of State, Marco Rubio, he added. Rubio, then a Republican senator from Florida serving on the Intelligence Committee, signed off on reports that looked into the creation of the Intelligence Community Assessment about Russia's meddling in the 2016 election, and one volume of those findings spent nearly 160 pages on that assessment Gabbard dredged up as questionable. The committee found that the ICA presents a coherent and well-constructed intelligence basis for the case of unprecedented Russian interference in the 2016 U.S. presidential election, the Senate report said. On analytical lines, the ICA, the committee concludes that all analytic lines are supported by all source intelligence, although with varying substantiation. The committee did not discover any significant analytic tradecraft issues in the preparation or final implementation of the ICA. Rubio also accepted another volume of the report that concluded Vladimir Putin had personally ordered a hack of Democratic operatives. Moscow's intent was to harm the Clinton campaign, tarnish an expected Clinton presidential administration, help the Trump campaign after Trump became the presumptive Republican nominee, and undermine the U.S. democratic process, the report states. The Senate investigation concluded that Trump was personally complicit, but their findings match up with allegations by special counsel Robert Mueller, who determined that Russian operatives successfully hacked Hillary Clinton's campaign and Democratic Party organizations, and those materials were posted online by WikiLeaks and other intermediaries to help the Republican candidate win the election. Why did the intelligence community become more convinced that Putin directed the effort to swing the election to Trump instead of just seeking to inject turmoil in U.S. elections, Kessler wrote. As news reports misquoted by Gabbard show, and as subsequent investigations confirm, additional credible evidence showed that Putin decided to back Trump over Clinton. That's not a conspiracy, but a natural evolution from careful investigative. Another distraction from the lack of transparency on the Epstein case is a DOJ meeting with Epstein's jailed co-conspirator. Deputy Attorney General Todd Blanche will meet with convicted sex trafficker and Jeffrey Epstein associate Ghislaine Maxwell in the next several days, Attorney General Pam Bondi said this week. Maxwell was convicted of sex trafficking in 2021 for recruiting and grooming multiple teenage girls for over a decade to be sexually abused by Jeffrey Epstein. She was investigated and indicted during the first Trump administration and tried and convicted during the Biden administration. The meeting was confirmed by Maxwell's attorney, David Oscar Marcus, who has been requesting meetings with the Trump administration officials and suggested that Maxwell should be freed. I can confirm that we are in discussions with the government and that Ghislaine will always testify truthfully, Marcus said. We are grateful to President Trump for his commitment to uncovering the truth in this case. NBC News has previously reported that Maxwell did not ask for a plea agreement and was not offered one leading up to her trial, according to statements made by federal prosecutors in pretrial hearings at the time. After being convicted in a trial in New York, she was sentenced to 20 years in federal prison. In a statement, Blant said the Justice Department stood by its July 6th statement that no evidence was uncovered that other individuals should be charged in the Epstein case. He said the statement remains as accurate today as it was when it was written. Blanche then appeared to criticize the work of prosecutors overseen by Attorney General Bill Barr during the investigation and indictment of Epstein and Maxwell during Trump's first term. He also appeared to criticize the work of prosecutors overseen by Attorney General Merrick Garland, who prosecuted Maxwell during the Biden administration. Until now, no administration on behalf of the department has inquired about her willingness to meet with the government. She said that changes now. Maxwell was found guilty on December 29, 2021, of conspiracy to entice minors to travel to engage in illegal sex acts and conspiracy to transport minors to participate in illegal sex acts, transporting a minor to participate in illegal sex acts, sex trafficking conspiracy, and sex trafficking of a minor. She is serving her 20-year sentence at a federal prison in Florida. You're listening to WSLR LP 96.5 FM in Sarasota and WVPV LP 100.1 FM in Bradenton. The big beautiful bill just made closing the Department of Education harder. When President Donald Trump on July 4th signed into law a mega bill with his spending and policy priorities, he distanced himself from another one of his goals, dismantling the U.S. Department of Education. Congressional Democrats have already tried to stand in the way of that effort, sometimes literally. So have federal courts, which continue to debate the legality of the president's attempts to weaken the agency whose work impacts students and schools across the country. But there's one obstacle that's less evident, the so-called One Big Beautiful Bill Act. Starting next year, the law will create two brand new federal student loan repayment plans. It also expands Pell Grants, a staple of college finance and financial aid, to include weeks-long post-high school training programs, and it binds colleges to a fresh set of rules meant to protect students and save taxpayers money. Under the law, there is one person ultimately responsible for carrying out those directives, Education Secretary Linda McMahon. Her entire department will be required to mobilize its depleting resources to execute the wishes of Congress and the president. The dynamic puts Trump in an awkward position. In February, he said he wanted McMahon to put herself out of a job. In order to legally do that, he needed support from Senate Democrats, which he doesn't have. But by signing his landmark spending law, Trump gave McMahon a laundry list of important things to do. And those tasks won't be simple or easy to turn into a reality, experts and former Education Department employees have said, without the right people to make them work. Trump has already cut the agency's workforce in half this year, and the Supreme Court on July 14th allowed more than 1,000 workers to stay fired while their layoffs are challenged in court. I do have significant concerns that the speed of the cuts will have left us with a department that is unable to effectively implement this legislation. Betty Acker, senior fellow at the right-leaning think tank American Enterprise Institute, told USA Today during a recent webinar. Those worries were echoed by John Farnsworth, Senior Vice President for Government Relations and National Engagement at the American Council on Education, the country's main higher education association. You can definitely anticipate a lot of problems, he said. College financial aid administrators are warning of significant disruption for students who rely on help to pay for school. In spite of that unease, top officials in the Education Department have stressed that the agency is well positioned to enact the law. On July 18th, the agency published some guidance for implementation, and more information would be provided in the weeks and months ahead, said Jeffrey Andre, a top agency official. For anyone who takes out new federal student loans after July 1st, 2026, the law eliminates all current repayment programs and replaces them with only two, a standard plan and a plan based on the borrower's income. The more than 40 million Americans who already have federal student loan debt will have to access some of the old repayment plans, but the 8 million borrowers enrolled in President Joe Biden's signature repayment plan will have to be switched to a different one by 2028. All of this work will be carried out by the Federal Student Aid Office, a branch of the Education Department. The One Big Beautiful Bill also creates a special type of Pell Grant. It will be made available to students enrolled in short-term programs between 8 and 15 weeks long in fields like cosmetology and welding. The Education Department has to start vetting and allowing schools to receive that money by July 2026. Trump's new legislation additionally tasks the Education Department with enforcing a framework for holding colleges and universities accountable for getting students well-paying jobs after graduation. Republicans call the measure do-no-harm test. Put simply, it takes away the ability of some college programs to let students take out federal loans if those schools aren't providing a good return on investment. Fully implement the program, staffers at the Education Department have a lot of number crunching to do. They'll likely need data from colleges, the Internal Revenue Service, the Bureau of Labor Statistics, and states, Farnsworth said. All of that information will need to be aggregated and calculated across tens of thousands of programs and thousands of schools over a years-long period. In December 2020, Congress passed a law to simplify the free application for federal student aid, a form that most students must fill out each year to get financial aid, but the rollout went haywire, jeopardizing the college dreams of millions. Some students decided to delay college or forego it altogether. Parents made important decisions without enough information, and universities lost trust in the federal financial aid system. Things turned around, though, after Biden's Education Department brought in a special team to focus on FAFSA. The form got better. Now it's easier than ever to fill out. In many college financial aid offices, the wounds from the FAFSA crisis are still fresh, and since the Education Department layoffs, schools have struggled to get in touch with the government for routine requests. Those issues are already affecting their ability to help students. Premiums on ACA policies are expected to rise dramatically unless Congress renews subsidies, which is not likely. Next year, Americans who buy health insurance through the Affordable Care Act exchanges are set to pay significantly more for coverage, and experts say policies advanced by President Donald Trump and congressional Republicans are at least partially to blame. An analysis released last week by the health policy research organization KFF and the Peterson Center on Healthcare found that across a sample of more than 105 ACA marketplace insurers in 19 states and in the District of Columbia, companies are set to increase premiums by a median of 15%. The analysis noted that insurers have cited a number of factors to justify pushing up premiums, including Trump's tariffs, which could drive up drug, equipment, and supply costs, and the expectation that the Republican-controlled Congress will not extend ACA tax credits that are set to expire at the end of the year. If Congress takes no action to renew these enhanced tax credits, enhanced subsidies will expire at the end of 2025, which will cause premium payments for subsidized enrollees to increase by over 75% starting in January 2026, the analysis states. Insurers expect a large share of enrollees to leave the market and that those enrollees will be healthier on the average, thus leaving the risk pool sicker on the average. While many health insurers submitted their rate hike proposals prior to the Republicans' passage of their sprawling budget reconciliation bill, which includes major attacks on the ACA and Medicaid, the measure could compel insurers to further raise premiums. Higher premiums would leave many more people unable to afford coverage. The KFF Peterson analysis also pointed to the Trump administration rule that imposes new restrictions on ACA enrollment. Early indications are that individual market insurers will be increasing premiums by 2026 by more than they have since 2018, the last time policy uncertainty contributed to sharp premium increases, the organization said. Vox's Dylan Scott noted that the Republican bill's changes to Medicaid didn't take effect until the end of 2026, but they could also push premiums higher if millions of people lose coverage as expected. When people lose Medicaid, they are more likely to end up in the emergency room, Scott explained. That requires more costly care than they'd get if they were insured. Those increased costs to hospitals are passed on to insured patients who, when providers negotiate their payment rates with health insurance plans. Brad Woodhouse, president of the advocacy group Protect Our Care, said in a statement Friday that Donald Trump and Republicans handed a massive tax break to billionaires and paid for it by ripping over $1 trillion out of our health care system. Now, hard-working families are stuck with the bills, said Woodhouse. Premiums are soaring, uninsured rates are growing, hospitals are closing, and millions are being forced to choose between affording care or covering rent. But that was no accident. It was the plan: decimate American health care to line the pockets of the rich and leave working families to suffer the consequences. Fallout is now hitting working families hard, he added, as premium costs are driven to new heights. The U.S. is out of UNESCO again. President Donald Trump is pulling the United States out of the United Nations Educational, Scientific, and Cultural Organization, or UNESCO, a White House official told CNN. The move comes as the U.S. president continues to pull the country out of international institutions and makes ending diversity, equity, and inclusion programs a key focus of his administration. President Trump has decided to withdraw the United States from UNESCO, which supports woke, divisive cultural and social causes that are totally out of step with the common sense policies that Americans voted for in November, White House Deputy Spokesperson Anna Kelly said in a statement. In a statement, State Department spokesperson Tammy Bruce added that the U.S. will continue participation in UNESCO is not in its national interest. The withdrawal will take effect December 31st, 2026. UNESCO promotes cooperation in education, science, culture, and communication to foster peace worldwide, its website states. The United States was a founding member of UNESCO in 1945, but withdrew in 1984, citing concerns over financial mismanagement and perceived bias against U.S. interests. Nearly two decades later, in 2003, the U.S. rejoined the organization during President George W. Bush's administration, with Bush stating that UNESCO had implemented important reforms. The U.S. again withdrew from UNESCO during the first Trump administration, but rejoined under Biden after he took office for the second time. President Donald Trump ordered a review of U.S. participation, including an analysis of any anti-Semitic or anti-Israel sentiment within the organization. Bruce alleged that UNESCO works to advance divisive social and cultural causes and maintains an outsized focus on the UN's sustainable development goals, a globalist ideological agenda for international development at odds with our America First foreign policy. UNESCO's decision to admit the state of Palestine as a member state is highly problematic, contrary to U.S. policy, and contributed to the proliferation of anti-Israel rhetoric within the organization, she said. UNESCO is widely recognized for its designation of World Heritage Sites, including the Grand Canyon National Park in the United States. The president says he wants to fire Fed Chair Jerome Powell. What would that even look like? President Donald Trump has blasted Federal Reserve Chair Jerome Powell for months for not lowering interest rates, even threatening to fire the central banker. Now the White House is seizing on a $2.5 billion renovation of the Fed's headquarters in Washington, D.C. as a potential legal opening to fire Powell as Trump calls for supersized rate cuts. President said last week that it's highly unlikely he would try to fire Powell, but he left the door open for fraud. Firing Powell would be an unprecedented move in the central bank's 111-year history, potentially sparking a landmark legal battle, turmoil in financial markets, and economic uncertainty. The move also won't assure Trump gets lower interest rates, since Powell is only one of 12 people at the Fed who vote on policy moves. Here are some key facts about the removal of a Fed official. Top administration officials have said that the Fed's renovation project is mismanaged, citing cost overruns. Some Republicans have claimed Powell lied to Congress when he told a panel of lawmakers last month that some upgrades won't be included in the renovation. Earlier this month, the Fed posted an FAQ page on its website detailing the project and why costs have ballooned. Does Trump have the power to fire Powell? Yes, but only in one instance. According to Section 10 of the Federal Reserve Act, the president can remove any member of the Fed's Board of Governors for cause, which is broadly interpreted to mean malfeasance, negligent of duty, or inefficiency. But they cannot be removed for policy differences, such as Trump's disagreement with the Fed's wait-and-see approach on interest rates. Trump has to prove there is sufficient cause to successfully remove Powell. And Powell technically has three jobs. He's a member of the Fed's board, chair of the Board of Governors, and chair of the Federal Open Market Committee. The Federal Open Market Committee is the Fed's group that sets interest rates, and the chair is voted into that position by committee members. It's unclear if the for-cause rule also applies to Powell's leadership roles. According to an analysis by Peter Conte Brown, a monetary policy scholar at University of Pennsylvania, the law says nothing, however, about whether the president can fire the board chair, effectively demoting him to being just one of the other governors. Other presidents have concluded that they lack the authority, and there was good reason to think they were right, but we just don't know. It's a legal uncertainty, he wrote for the Brookings Institute. If Trump fires Powell, is he immediately out? No. Under the for-cause removal, Powell would have a chance to respond. It's unclear how much time Powell would have to respond. There hasn't been a presidential for-cause removal proceeding in a century, so exactly how much time Powell has to be heard is really hard to say, said Lev Menard, an associate professor at Columbia Law School who researches financial institutions. A removal order would mean Powell is effectively fired, but he could still sue. He would have to argue that his firing was unjustified and show why it's crucial for him to remain as chair. It could take months for the case to be resolved. From Trump from when Trump issues a removal order, when a final ruling, likely from the Supreme Court, is handed down. The case could even stretch until Powell's term as chair expires in May of 2026. If the courts issue an injunction, then Powell remains at the Fed as chair during the litigation. However, if the courts do not issue a preliminary injunction, then Fed Vice Chair Philip Jefferson would be responsible for Powell's duties in the meantime. That means Jefferson, appointed to the Fed board in 2022 by former President Joe Biden, would preside over the Fed's policy meetings, regulate banks, and oversee the central bank's other day-to-day activities. You're listening to WSLR LP 96.5 FM in Sarasota and WBPV LP 100.1 FM in Bradenton. Stay tuned for a live report from last Saturday's protest of the governor's plan to turn the National Guard training facility Camp Landing into another immigration detention center by Ramon Lopez, a member of the WSLR news team.
We say justice, you say hell, stop the deportations now!
Justice, you say how? Stop the deportations now!
We say justice, you say how? Stop the deportations now!
It was a sweltering Saturday afternoon for the 700 to 1,000 vocal demonstrators who baked under scorching summer sunlight at Camp Landing in Florida. They lined a highway across from the front gate of the Florida National Guard training base in a peaceful protest, pushing back on plans to open a second detention center near Stark in Clay County for Immigration and Customs Enforcement, or ICE, undocumented immigrant detainees. Last month, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis announced plans to stand up a facility at Camp Landing, southwest of Jacksonville in northeast Florida. This in addition to the initial detention center in the Everglades, dubbed Alligator Alcatraz. Last week, however, DeSantis disclosed that he would delay startup of the Camp Landing detention site. The plan is to fill up Alligator Alcatraz to capacity with 3,000 to 4,000 detainees before moving ahead with Camp Landing. But it's full steam ahead for turning the state military base into a detention facility as a request for proposal for bids from potential private vendors to run the detention site has been issued.
We sent out the RFP for Blanding. I think that there are a number of people that submitted bids. I'm willing to do Blanding once Alligator Alcatraz is filled. Blanding can be turned on very quickly. I know they'll award the bids once we make that decision. This may happen in a matter of a week or two, right? I mean, it's possible.
Democratic lawmakers are critical of the Alligator Alcatraz setup. And days after President Trump and Governor DeSantis toured the facility in the Everglades, attorneys, advocates, and detainees' relatives spoke out about the poor conditions there. But DeSantis said Alligator Alcatraz is up to standards, as will be the second ICE setup at Camp Landing.
This is not the Ritz-Carlton, okay? We're not doing this just to let people have food and shelter, although they do get that. But that's not, and all the minimum standards are upheld. But the reality is it's there to be a quick processing center so that they can, we have a runway right there, they can just be flown back to their home country.
While detainees live in tents at Alligator Alcatraz, Blanding has Army-style barracks and buildings that will be repurposed for those in custody, about 2,000 ICE detainees. And like Alligator Alcatraz, Blanding has an airfield, which the state plans to use to remove detained undocumented immigrants to their countries of origin. Ironically, history reveals that Camp Blanding previously provided for prisoners. of the 378,000 German military personnel captured during World War II, about 10,000 lived and worked in prison camps in Florida. Most of them were assigned to two large camps, one in the Panhandle near Carrabelle and the second at Camp Blanding. They cleaned military bases, picked and packed citrus, cut sugarcane, dug up potatoes, and chopped down trees in Florida's vast pine forests. This until released at war's end. But a deeper dive in history shows that 4,000 German civilians were arrested in Latin America after the shock of the Pearl Harbor attack, then sent north to be interned in camps across America. About 200 of them ended up at Camp Blanding. The civilian deportation program was never kept secret, but it remained largely overlooked for decades, overshadowed by the mass internment in the U.S. of people of Japanese descent. Now, history will reflect that Donald Trump kept his campaign promise to crack down on illegal immigration by ramping up arrests, detainments, and deportations. The recently enacted so-called Big Beautiful Bill will dramatically change the U.S. immigration system. It sets aside $45 billion to expand the network of immigrant detention facilities for adult migrants and families. ICE will increase its current detention capacity from about 41,000 people to 100,000, as ICE has been ordered to make 3,000 arrests per day of undocumented people in the country. The immigrant dragnet will be supercharged by the $12 billion earmarked to hire 18,000 new ICE and Border Patrol personnel to spread through Florida and other states. Despite DeSantis' decision to put his pet prison project on ice for now, the protesters said the rally at Camp Blanding would go on as previously planned to pour antifreeze on the second ice house that's planned. Saturday's protest at Camp Blanding was organized by the Jacksonville Immigrant Rights Alliance, or JIRA. Similar demonstrations have taken place in recent months where protesters called various actions by Trump and DeSantis inhumane. But state officials insist that the planned new facility is necessary for public safety and that detainees' rights will be protected. Stretching across the highway with some passing drivers honking their support, the protesters waved their homemade signs criticizing the future detention site and the immigration-related policies and tactics of the Trump administration. The signs read, "No deportations, no camps. We need FEMA, not death camps. No human is illegal. I prefer crushed ice, melt ice," and reflecting the 102 degrees Fahrenheit registered that day, "ice melts in the heat." Speakers included JIRA organizer Jonathan Gonzalo Klenick.
"Drawing a line in the sand and saying we are not going to allow concentration camps built in our state or anywhere in this country, that this is wrong, and the moves that they're trying to make with Alligator Alcatraz, we cannot let that continue," which is seems to be the plan that DeSantis wants for Camp Blanding right here in Clay County.
Yeah, you are aware that he's delayed the opening of this camp. Is that considered a victory for you?
Not yet. It's not a victory until it's absolutely canceled and all concentration camps of it akin to it are completely dismantled. I think the fact that he's considering slowing down means that he's feeling some of the pressure and that he doesn't have enough of gas in the tank to continue with his plans, which means that now is the time, especially now, to act and continue the pressure until we cross that finish line. I just grew up with a lot of different people in my life from a lot of different places who look like a lot of different sort of ways, from Mexican to Filipino immigrants, over in the Southern California area. And so an attack on immigrants feels like an attack on my childhood, to attack on everything that I hold dear from my life.
He was not alone in attacking both Governor DeSantis's backing of President Trump and the chief executive's mass deportation agenda.
We protest having any further, I call them incarceration, concentration camps in our region. What's going on down south is bad enough. We don't want it up here. We don't believe this is the way to treat immigrants who are not criminals for the most part, but are workers and part of our economy and our life.
Keep up this fight, because this is the good fight. This is the fight that we need to be taking part in, and we will not be silent until there's no camp at Camp Blanding.
We are out here to make sure that our state is not used as the guinea pig for fascism and for authoritarianism any longer.
This is like going back to Nazi Germany or, you know, the Japanese during World War II. There's no reason why these people should be in jail when they get pulled away from their families and their jobs. Why are they going to jobs to pick up people? I thought they were going after the drug dealers. Drug dealers are not going to report to Home Depot for work.
With a third detention center planned by DeSantis in an undisclosed place in the Florida panhandle, and with deepening dismay over the nation's evolving immigration policy, more rallies and protests can be expected to sweep the Sunshine State and the rest of the country, keeping heat on the nation's politicians.
For those just tuning in, you're listening to WSLR LP 96.5 FM in Sarasota and WBPV LP 100.1 FM in Bradenton.
Thanks, Ramon, for that great coverage of the protest and for braving the Florida heat to get it. How you doing today?
I'm doing well. Thanks for inviting me to participate in your show.
Yeah, you know, as you mentioned in your report, you know, Governor DeSantis has said that the conversion of Camp Blanding facility as the second concentration camp in the state is on hold after the first one, incorrectly named Alligator Alcatraz, fills up. But from what I read, that camp has a capacity of 3,000 to 5,000 detainees, and that they'll have the ability to ship them out as soon as their project's processed. Do you think this place will ever need to be opened, or is this another grandstanding move by the governor to prove he's the most MAGA of all?
Well, that's a good question. And let's, based on the numbers, let's do the math. The Alligator Alcatraz facility, detention facility, that's what they call it. I think you referred to it as the concentration camp. Some would argue that's too strong a word, but that's here nor there. But the Alligator Alcatraz is designed to hold 4,000 people. It's being said, and the information is sketchy as regards Camp Blanding, but it's been said by by DeSantis' people that the Camp Blanding will be designed to hold 2,000 people. So now we're up to 6,000. And then there's discussion, again, very vague, about opening up a third facility in the Panhandle area. So you put all that together, and that gives you a pretty good capacity. But I think the numbers that need to be looked at is the goes beyond that, and that is ICE intends to increase its current detention capacity from about 41,000 people to 100,000 people. Because ICE has been ordered to make 3,000 arrests per day of undocumented people in the country. And at the same time, they're going to be hiring 18,000 new ICE and Border Patrol personnel to conduct this immigration dragnet. At the same time, the Department of Defense said that two bases are going to be used as detention facilities, one in New Jersey and one in Indiana, specifically Camp Atterbury in Indiana and Joint Base McGuire-Dix-Lakehurst in New Jersey. That was a basic training base for the Army, and that has, you know, lots of barracks as a result. So you put all that together, and with those numbers, which is the goal for ICE, they could very well need the three bases or the three detention facilities in Florida if they continue to do what they've started to do. DeSantis said he could very well fill up the Everglades facility in weeks, and then he said it wouldn't take long to open up Camp Blanding, though when I was there I didn't see, although I wasn't allowed on the base, a whole lot of activity, a whole lot of construction going on. But again, Camp Blanding being a National Guard training base already has lots of barracks to be converted into detention areas. If it's anything like the facility in the Everglades, it'll look like basically a dormitory with double bunk beds with toilet facilities, open toilet facilities, I should note, in the middle of the room, and of course there'll be fences surrounding the area for the internment. So yes, I do believe they could very well do it if this policy progresses as is.
I'll tell you one thing, you know, I'm skipping around a little bit from what I sent you, you know, that both, you know, Alcatraz and the Camp Blanding site have mm-hmm. in common is that they both have airfields, you know,
yeah.
And the governor did say, you know, that it is, you know, a one-stop shop, you know, that, you know, illegal immigrants, you know, can be, you know, detained, processed, and put on a plane and ship back to wherever they came from. You know, I understand looking at your bio, you know, you've got some background writing about aviation. Is this plausible? I mean, do these, you know, kinds of facilities, what would need to be done to be able to do that? I mean, is it, you know,
Alligator Alcatraz is actually built on a unused airfield, which was designed originally to be a reliever airport for Miami International. There was talk about developing it into a public airport, but that hasn't happened yet at that point. So, but there is an airfield there. You know, there's extensive runways at that field in the Everglades, so that could be used to bring in, I would say, small to medium-sized commercial jets to move people in and out. And then if they're transporting maybe a dozen or two dozen at a time, they could use a regional jet or regional turboprop sizes. So that wouldn't be a problem. So they can do what they want to do, which is to process these people and get them out within days, very easily from the Everglades facility. Camp Blanding, on the other hand, it does have an airfield. I looked up to see what the field is. The airfield features two gravel runways capable of handling C-130 aircraft. Now, that's the standard U.S. Air Force turboprop transports. They can handle relatively short runways, but you aren't going to get commercial jetliners of any size really into an airport with gravel. So there'll be limited transport out of Camp Blanding, but you know, Jacksonville International is only maybe 35-40 minutes away, so I could see transporting people from the Camp Blanding to a commercial airfield for long distance flights, say to Mexico, which is where a number of these individuals would be sent.
Great, yeah. Sort of, that's interesting. And the interesting, sort of the point of my original question was about, you know, how fast they could empty out Alligator Alcatraz, you know, with that airport, you know, if their intent is really just to, you know, just process people. And now especially, and I know you've probably heard of this, you know, there's no more bonds for immigrants. So
yeah.
once they got you, they got you, you know, and from what I understand, too, you know, they are supposedly made an offer free trip, free ticket to back to your country, you know, and you just take that, you get the ticket, and you just fly back to wherever you go. So, you know, my guess was that, or my estimation was that they'd be trying to move them out as fast as they were bringing them in. You know, so.
Well, that's the intention is to bring them in and have a hearing of some nature. You know, offer them the what's being called people are being offered self deportation, and many of them are taking it, and so. And once they accept the self-deportation, the plan and the what's happening is that they will be shipped out within 2 or 3 days, and from when they make their sign the paperwork and make the agreement. So, but you're not going to have, you know, I would say you would have dozens shipped out at a time. Perhaps they'll collect them and maybe have 20 or 30, 50, but not, no, there won't be thousands being, you know, leaving or hundreds leaving on a daily or even a weekly basis. You know, they'll be shipped out in groups. So, you know, smaller planes, jetliners, like regional jets, regional turboprops, you know, could be used and we'll be able to handle the load. But again, the question is, how many people are going to be collected? But based on the numbers we talked about, it could be a very significant number of people, and going in and out of these two detention centers.
Yeah, and I guess too, just as an observation of mine, you know, and concur or you know, just see if you agree with me that. You know, just the proposal of these new detention centers, you know, to me is like a signal that, you know, they're really going to ramp up, Florida law enforcement participation and just grabbing people off the street. You know, I know, you know, speaking to Ernesto Ruiz, who with the Farm Workers Association of Florida, you know, noted that, you know, a lot of the people in his organization, you know, they get picked up on traffic stops a lot, you know, because I talked to them like a few weeks ago, and this was before Alligator Alcatraz had really even opened, and you know, asking him really if he knew anybody that was headed down there. And he says, no, we just get a lot of the farm workers get grabbed in traffic stops, and they're in local jails, you know. But, you know, he also sort of didn't hear, he hasn't heard a lot about people, you know, taking the deal. You know, where they offered to pay people $1,000 to self-deport. You know, he basically said that was, that was like, you know, Mexico builds the wall. That was just not really true.
Well, that's interesting, Lou, because I've been talking to immigration lawyers and also activists who are heavily involved in representing these individuals, and they are saying the opposite right now anyway, that people are taking those quote deals and self-deploying, which includes a one-way ticket and signing paperwork which keeps them from coming back into the United States within a certain amount of time. Supposedly, they're supposed to be getting $1,000 in cash to help them get started, almost like what happens when a convict gets paroled and is released, when they give them a new suit and some pocket cash to pay for a bus ticket. But I understand now that that ICE is welching on the $1,000 pocket money deal that. They'll give you the individual the airline ticket and say, congrats, you know, see you later.
I have to go with your reporting because you obviously have spoken to a wider range of people than even Ernesto probably talks to, because they're based in Apopka, you know, and they basically focus on their group of, you know, basically farm workers, you know, who work in that central area
Well, there's, I don't have to look very far to get an example about people taking the self-deportation outing. Because there's a young woman, a 22-year-old woman named Maria Martinez, who was caught up by ICE because she got pulled over in Northport, where she lives, for making an illegal U-turn. It turned out that she didn't have a driver's license, and the authorities went further and discovered that she was undocumented. Well, they turned her over to ICE, and ICE took her over, sent her into detention for about 90 days now, it's been. After spending 90 days in a detention center in Texas, living in a barracks type of arrangement with 130 other women, she decided enough is enough. I don't want to do this anymore. I will self-deploy. And I will be in Mexico, but I'll be out of prison, and I can try to do what I can do to get back into the United States, which is of dubious possibilities, according to her lawyer, who has investigated thoroughly her situation. So yeah, people are taking that route because they want to get out of detention and detainment, and they say it's better to fight this out of jail versus in. And again, a number of these people aren't criminals. They're undocumented. There's a difference. Some people would argue there isn't, but they're not hardened criminals, which is what the original plan of Donald Trump was to use this program to get hardened criminals out of the country quickly. But it's expanded to rounding up all undocumented, and with a goal of with a goal of 3,000 people a day. That's a lot of people, and a lot of them are taking the better of the options, which is either stay in jail and fight this, or fight it, free and albeit in another country. It's kind of a catch-22. People would argue that you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't.
Yeah. Well, there are a lot of people in this country, who don't think it's a good idea, as evidenced by the protests that you covered. Do you think protests?
Perhaps Maria Martinez. She's the young woman who with the Jacksonville Immigration Rights Alliance, which organized that demonstration at Camp Landing last Saturday, has offered the best assessment of the impact of that demonstration and what needs to be done and what has been done. And maybe we should just hear from her.
Being established people!